following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 83 for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2011. Is iPad 2 right for you? And hello, everyone, and everyone's saying, Wednesday? What is going on with that?
Yes, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
First of the week just seems to always get slammed with either transportation problems or unscheduled meetings or...
something like that lately.
Just bizarre.
And much to...
or some radio station tries to have some sort of a staff meeting.
No, this is my work stuff. They've been having to pick up people, which means that I don't get picked up till 6 at night sometimes, and then getting home and trying to do a podcast on top of all of that just doesn't work well. And trying to get it edited and produced and all that kind of stuff. So we decided, well, we'll move to Tuesdays. Well, we have a similar potential problem. Let's move it to the weekends. Well, that never works because we have other life issues that get in the way. So it's going to probably end up being on Wednesdays.
We have no lives, but it seems to get in the way.
We have lives. We just don't have very, you know. Anyway, we got stuff to do, and Wednesdays just unfortunately seems to be the day this is going to get done for the foreseeable future.
Yes, so we will start recording on Wednesdays, and if we have to bump it any other days, we don't know where it will go.
Yeah, so it will be Wednesdays from now until we tell you it's moved again, but this will be its regular slot.
It's like we almost need a newsletter to mail out.
I know. Mm. I know.
Mm. Not going there.
No. God, no. No.
No?
No.
Okay.
So, on that note, we will simply say that for the past week and a half, there hasn't been a whole lot of news, except for today.
Well, there's been news over the last week and a half.
It's not just much.
Not a whole heck of a lot. And this show will have a little bit different format than usual. Mm-hmm. Stories are in a little bit different order, so you'll just have to stick around to find out what's going to happen.
We will begin, however, with our usual security news.
I was going to move that to the end.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, no.
Our format isn't going to be that different.
Okay.
There is a new Trojan on the Mac.
Yes, Mac OS X now has a
Black
Trojan.
Black Hole Rat.
Yeah. RAT, which pretty much stands for the Remote Access Trojan.
Yes.
It's very similar to a exploit that is on Windows. Mm-hmm. Now, this one is a little bit funny because the guy who is working on this particular malware hasn't really been tremendously malicious. He is placing plain text files on people's desktops, puts their computer to sleep, runs commands to have their computer restart or shut down, and it will actually arbitrarily just run some different shell commands from the command line, which is kind of amusing. And what does it do? It puts up a pop-up on your screen.
Oh my God, this is... do you have the actual text in front of you?
Actually, no, I do not.
Oh gosh, it was funny. Like, it just says some stupid stuff like, "Hello, I am a piece of malware. Yes, you are infected, even though you are using a Mac. I have taken control," misspelled, "of your Mac," controll. Now, this isn't verbatim, but I do know that control is misspelled. And the next sentence says, "I am a piece of malware," or something like that. And "I'm" does not have an apostrophe in it. I am. And it goes on and on and on. "Woohoo, you've been infected by malware and you're a Mac, so ha ha," type of thing. It's not, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it sounds like these people are doing it more to make a statement than to actually be really malicious.
Well, I mean, everybody has said for years that mm-hmm. Macs are so much safer. There's no viruses on the Macs. But, I mean, Apple is slowly starting to grab market share and mm-hmm. people are going to start to see viruses. So it's kind of amusing. But even on Windows platforms, usually when there's misspellings in a pop-up message, that usually tells you that this is not correct. Granted, if it's in a blog, most likely there are misspellings.
Oh, God, don't get me started.
No. Get away from the soapbox. Get off, off, stop.
Ah!
Okay.
I should have a thud.
Yeah, I need a thud.
A big thud noise.
If you have sound effects that you would like to submit.
That may not have worked. Anyway.
Anyway, Microsoft, seeing as how that was a Microsoft glitch beforehand.
No, that was an Apple glitch we just talked about.
Well, it's a glitch for Apple that is related to Microsoft. So it kind of goes hand in hand there. A little bit of a flow there, you know. But Microsoft has fixed a flaw in their security antivirus software. And if you have not downloaded your recent updates for Microsoft, you need to do that. Also, there is a wonderful formatting glitch in Microsoft Word in 2010 and 2007, actually.
I don't really understand this one.
It's basically saying that if you save things in Microsoft Word 2010 as a .docx, which is their XML format, great format. It's very flexible with how you can save it and import it into other applications. Problem is that some people are experiencing issues where if you import it or send it to someone using Word 2007, words randomly throughout the document will have spaces missing.
Huh.
So you might run into this if you're using a screen reader and it just all of a sudden mushes some things together, or if you're sending a document to someone, they may say, well, don't you know how to use a space bar? So it's a glitch. They have not come up with a fix for it. It is recommended that you can actually save things as doc files, the old DOC format. I mean,
that's the only thing I ever use.
Yeah, at work, we are using 2007, and they don't want you to use anything but the docx. Why? I'm not exactly sure. So it is something to consider if you are passing around Word documents.
So it just happens with docx? It doesn't happen with just doc files?
Yes, docx. There's something about it that is a problem between 2010 and 2007. Not apparent whether it is a problem if you send the file to 2003, which can read docx.
That was my next question.
But cannot write docx.
Right.
Mostly 10 and 7. Now, in something that I probably and think I did get mixed up date-wise, Windows has now got a Service Pack 1. It was released on the 22nd. Of February, and it is going to be out there for Windows 7 and Server 2008 Release 2.
Yes, I don't think if you have Windows 7 that there's much of an improvement, many new things.
No,
I think there are some just sort of stability enhancements and general overall tweaks. I think there were a couple of new enhancements in Server 2008.
Yeah, there's a few little enhancements that you're really not going to notice. Most of the time, the service packs are mostly just roll-ups of previous
already installed updates.
Exactly. It has been stated that if you are running Windows 7 and you're going to do the update, that it is better that if you go through the actual Windows update process, because I think there is a prerequisite that you need to download first.
I don't even remember that it did it.
Yeah, I mean, you should have everything set. You should have everything set to auto update. That way you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is a couple people I've seen on Twitter had just huge amounts of problems when they updated, and I never noticed a thing. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, I don't know. Different system configurations. That's the headache that Windows and Microsoft have to work out. If you are interested in more information about the service pack before you download it, you can get it from support.microsoft.com, article number KB976932. And if you are one of those people that want to install it on multiple computers or just have a simple backup for next time you reinstall, there are two different versions. There is a 1 gigabyte version of the file for update and a 2 gigabyte. And they recommend that if you are going to keep a copy, you want to keep the 2 gigabyte. And you can get links in the KB976932 article.
Yes. We will switch gears now and talk about Android for a little while. Android. Why are you doing that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Just something funny to do.
Well, anyway, I never even said it yet. You did it.
Oh.
Darn. Code Factory has come out with an accessibility solution for the Android platform. Oh, I thought you were going to do it again. A Code Factory has developed a suite of mobile accessibility products for Android phones. It's a little bit confusing because there's actually a suite of products including email client, calendar, document reader, phone and contact manager. Kind of loads about 10 different little products that Code Factory has bundled up together in a little bundle for Android. You can buy it in the Android App Store for approximately 69 euros. This suite of products is not native to the phone, but it gives you access to a lot of things that are native to the phone, like email, contact manager, calendar, but in a blind-friendly format, I guess. You can use this suite of products on a phone with or without tactile navigation, so you can have a touchscreen or not, I think. However, there is a screen reading component also to this accessibility suite, and it can only be used on phones with tactile navigation devices. So if you want to access any of the native apps on the phone or other apps you download from the Android store, you need a phone with touch navigation, even if it's just a tracking ball.
Doesn't seem like an improvement.
Well, I don't know. I think it probably is an improvement, but it tightens up your experience.
Yeah, so basically, if you want to use a touch screen, Code Factory maybe isn't the way to go yet.
Probably not. I mean, the applications themselves, I mean, they did it for efficiency and productivity, but it's like a blind ghetto product. I'm sorry to say, folks, but it is. It sounds like it's a really good product, but there's really no room for innovation. Maybe there's room for Code Factory to innovate its little product, you know, sandbox product, but, you know, it doesn't really interact with the native phone very well unless you have, you know, touch navigation of some sort, tactile navigation of some sort.
Kind of makes you wonder.
And you can't really use any, I mean, in my understanding, you can't really use any of the other apps on a touch screen.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder if it's the sort of problems with Android in itself, that you have different screens, you have different models, whether it's a touch screen or whether it's a keyboard or something.
That's very true.
Kind of makes you wonder if Code Factory is having a problem deciding between which way to go.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I think they still want to maintain, you know, a keyboard interface. I think that's still pretty much the way they feel that blind people will want to experience the phone. And I also think that how hard is it, though, really? How hard is it to make things compatible with both? It makes you kind of wonder how hard that is. Maybe it's more difficult than we think.
Well, from a programming standpoint, I can see it being more difficult because you have to be able to anticipate the touch of the keyboard, you know, the key presses and the key swipes and all that kind of stuff. And then it's different when it's actually a physical key press. Because it's kind of a different reaction that the phone is doing. So it's kind of like two different operating systems that you're trying to code for. At least that's the way I would think of it being.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, Code Factory's solution is, I mean, it's nice. Being that the Android has a lot of, I mean, there's so much choice in the app market, and you don't know which screen reading solution, seeing as how there are three or four, works best with which apps. So, I mean, Code Factory solution is nice in that way. I mean, it does bundle everything up together, very commonly used tasks, and you know you're going to get, you know, very efficient, productive screen feedback in those areas. So that's nice.
Yeah, but it's one of those places where Android hasn't really stepped, Google hasn't stepped up and made a screen reader that will interact with everything, kind of like the iPhone. Most apps are accessible, you know, so you can kind of, you got a good 60-40 chance of it being voiceover compatible.
Right. So, I mean, if I had an Android and I was trying to, and I was considering whether or not to purchase it, you know, I'd have to evaluate all the alternatives, but I would strongly consider it. I mean, I think it's a good product. I just don't know if it's, I mean, I don't know how much 69 euros is in dollars. So I know
probably
it's over
$150.
Bucks, I don't know if it would be worth that.
I don't feel like bringing up Wolfram Alpha.
No. Okay. Well, that's really all I have to say about that. If anyone has any experience with it, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, I've kind of seen some Twitters going around today saying that it seemed kind of disappointing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, hey, it's their first stab, seems like, at it. So at least they're putting an effort, as opposed to Microsoft and Windows Phone. That had problems with their updates, but we'll just go,
we'll just move right along here.
Yeah.
There is an app for the iPhone and Android that is really cool. I mean, I don't know if it's cool, but it sounds cool. It's called DanCam.
With an N.
Yes, DanCam. And it is an app that takes color images and transposes them into colors. Well, how do you explain this? It makes them into images that colorblind people would see. I don't know how to explain it.
The way I kind of take it is that it is going to take an image and it's going to change the colors.
Yeah.
That's so, kind of what I'm envisioning it doing, or the way I'm kind of understanding it, is that it's going to change the colors so that someone can say, I'm colorblind and I can't see the color green. So if they can't see the color green, it may manipulate the colors so that it takes out the green and replaces it with something else.
That's the way I look at it. Now, I haven't had run into anyone who uses it, but it has gotten some very good ratings in the iPhone app store and in some other places. So it'd be interesting to get some feedback on actually how it works.
And it is $2.99 currently in the iOS app store.
Yes. I don't know anyone who's colorblind, so I doubt we'll get feedback. But it does sound like a really cool idea. Kind of genius, actually.
Yeah, because I kind of brought up the screen print here, you know, and it's kind of showing some different patterns and showing how it's changing the color so that you can tell what it looks like.
The whole colorblind thing, though, is rather mysterious to me, so I guess that's probably why I don't understand it.
Why is it mysterious?
Well, either you can see colors or you can't. I don't quite get the concept of people not being able to see certain colors.
Well, when you're colorblind, you can see colors, but there are some colors that you just literally cannot see.
So there's like, if you can't see green, then you look down at grass, and what color is it? Is there nothing there?
It'll be some other color. I knew a guy that he was colorblind. He could, he could not see green. But when he would look at somebody that was wearing a green shirt, it would look kind of blue. So he'd think everybody was wearing a blue shirt on St. Patrick's Day.
What about grass underneath? Like if you're walking through a field or something, is it blue?
It's going to look whatever your eyes think that it's supposed to.
That's bizarre.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, I know the whole rods and cones thing. Yeah, I get it, but it's still weird.
I mean, it's kind of like you might not be able to see red, you know, so you have to get used to seeing red as green or something. So it could be a little difficult if you're driving and have streetlights.
Whoa! Yeah, let's leave that there.
Kind of amusing.
Moving on to another app that I think is only available on the iPhone as of yet, maybe for the iPad, but not for Android, I don't think. It is called Wheel Map. And it is an app that is also sort of like a wiki. It's like Foursquare for wheelchairs, essentially. You can take, if you are at a certain location, there are currently 30,000 locations mapped in there, you can learn about its accessibility for wheelchairs and other similar, you know, mobility devices. You know, whether the place has ramps, how the city's buildings are laid out, all that kind of thing, how the streets are, you know, if they've got curb cuts, whatever. And so it's a kind of rating system where you can rate the cities and towns you're in, or even buildings and restaurants that you're going to, and put them into this app and upload it, I guess, to the cloud where other users can, you know, download the same information to their iPhones for all over the world.
It's kind of a Yelp for...
Yeah.
Wheelchairs.
Yeah, Foursquare wasn't quite the word I was looking for. Like a Yelp, exactly. And it's
Foursquare, you can give tips and things.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Hey, if you're going to this restaurant, don't eat that.
Yeah, but it's not really like check-ins like Foursquare. It's more like I'm here and here are the tips on mobility and accessibility that I see. You know, it doesn't have a ramp and it should, or this place has great curb cutouts, or, you know, whatever. So I thought that was kind of cool, and I think it's available in English, German, and Japanese at this point, but they're coming out with other languages soon.
Yeah, may have to check this out and see what it looks like. It is currently free in the Apple iTunes Store.
I can say it. Okay.
That's kind of good.
Yeah.
But speaking of the iPhone, the vendetta by Consumer Reports continues, where they will not say that they care for the Apple, Verizon, iPhone, or the AT&T version because of AntennaGate.
Yeah, the Verizon said, oh, we'll correct the AT&T antenna issue. Well, Consumer Reports took the iPhone, Verizon iPhone, took it into some shielded chambers with, you know, simulated cell signals and all kinds of other stuff, and held the iPhone in the same, pretty similar way, I guess, to the way they held it for the AT&T, and they still got the drop signals.
Yeah, and I haven't seen a picture of how they were actually getting the signal to drop. There was a picture by CNET or Engadget or somebody that had like half of their hand over the phone and it would make it drop, you know, whereas the AT&T version, you can hold it in the wrong corner and it will give you that issue, you know.
Right.
But if you have the wonderful little, the glyph,
like I that have we talked on the about phone at last the moment, week.
Yeah, on one of our daily tips, it actually covers that spot and you don't have the problem.
Yay, glyph.
So yeah, it just seems like Consumer Reports has a problem with Apple.
Yeah, I don't know if it's consistent, like, you know, if they are having, finding extra problems with Macs, or is it just the iPhone and iPad, or what?
Seems like the iPhone 4 they just have a problem with. So I don't know whether it's just an easy cop-out saying, yeah, we don't really think you should go with the iPhone.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows? But
they're concerned about monopoly.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. But seeing as how Android keeps growing, it's kind of like you can't really call it a monopoly. But anyway, during Apple's earnings report last week, they finally announced what the North Carolina data center is actually going to be used for, or sort of.
Sort of, yeah. Apparently it's going to be used to kind of filter, sift through a lot of inquiries that go through MobileMe and iTunes.
Yeah, so it's kind of going to be opening up in the spring at some point, most likely whenever they announce the iPhone 5. And it is rumored to be a system that will handle the MobileMe, which is rumored to possibly be free at some point to store all your documents and such. And it may be a streaming service similar to the one that they purchased called Lala, which was kind of like Rhapsody or Last FM. They still haven't done anything with that, even though they purchased it in, I believe, 2009.
2009 or 8 or yeah, something? Nine, it was a I long time ago.
And everyone's thinking that it's going to be a new iTunes streaming service, but as of yet, nothing.
Nothing. Apparently, the place is going to be 500,000 square feet.
That's pretty big.
That's big. Where is it going to be at?
I can't remember the name of the
town.
It's
like this little bitty town. It wasn't anywhere I'd ever heard of.
Well, it'd have to be nowhere for 500,000
square feet
or whatever.
Not acres. Yeah. Yeah, at least not acres. Large. That would be like, whoa. Holy moly. But apparently, you know, Governor Perdue was giving out this money to what large company could spend the most in poor areas of the state, like make investments.
Yeah, they did the same thing for Dell.
Yeah.
And Dell came and then they pulled out and what was it? Fidelity, I believe, came and did something a couple years ago in
North Carolina.
And then they pulled out. Well, they hired a bunch of people so that they could actually get the tax break, and then they got rid of the people got it.
Yeah. So anyway, hopefully
local politics.
That will not happen with Apple, and Apple will come and give people jobs and stuff, you know, and things like that.
Now,
yay, North Carolina.
Yes. Now, in other news, sort of Apple-related in a way, Intel finally debuted Lightpeak, which is now called Thunderbolt. Why you need to call it Thunderbolt, I don't know, other than it seems really awesome.
Wow.
It is a connectivity port that you will actually be able to send all types of data through, whether it's video, audio, and such. It is going to be supposedly 12 times faster than FireWire 800 ports, and initial versions will actually be able to transfer 10 gigabits per second.
What did that say? You could get a 30-second, a movie.
A Blu-ray movie, which would be about 20 gigs or more.
30 seconds?
30 seconds, and 64 gigs of music could be moved in 1 minute.
Wow.
And this is a technology that will actually potentially be up to 100 gigabits per second at some point. Mm. Apple is going to be the first ones to use this in their new MacBook Pros, which they announced last Thursday on Mr. Jobs' 56th birthday.
God, is he that young? I thought he was older than that.
No, no, pretty much that's about it.
Oh, man.
But this is actually going to have a form factor very similar to the mini display port that Apple has been using on their computers for the last couple years. Their new MacBook Pro is going to be in sizes of 13, 15, and 17 inch. The biggest notables is that the 13 inch will start at $1,199 for a Core i5 or Core i7 processor. 15 and 17 inch will have Core i7 quad core processors with integrated HD graphics. One of the cool things is that the MacBooks will actually start having a upgrade that you can do, which is an SD slot.
Nice.
It'll be a SDXC, which will actually support up to a 64 gigabyte card.
Nice.
That's a lot of storage.
That is.
Granted, that 64 gigabyte card will probably end up costing you somewhere around $200 right now.
Wow. How much does a 32 gig card cost?
Around 100.
Does it really?
Somewhere between 80 and 150, depending on the speed class that you get.
Wow.
So that was a big deal last week.
Let's talk about the Zoom.
Well, one problem that people are having with tablets is the fact that the competition is, let's try and get out ahead of the iPad. Mm-hmm. We have to catch up with the iPad. Pad. I'm trying to say pad instead of pod.
Pad.
It's almost like I'm from Boston, but transplanted to Southern United States. Strange. Anyway, the Zoom, X-O-O-M by Motorola, I believe it is actually going to come out, and or actually did come out last week, and they have a Wi-Fi version. If you want to upgrade it to the 4G LTE from the 3G that it was released with, you have to send it in for 6 days.
That's just stupid.
You have to mail it back in April to get the upgrade chip, which they are saying pretty much you have to undo two screws and unhook a cable from the motherboard and make a change. That's about it. Take about 10 minutes for a typical technician or a donkey, as iFixit says.
Although they did say you have to have the SIM card, but I mean, whatever, you know.
So pretty much it sounds like you could do this at home and be done with it, as opposed to having to send your device in for 6 days. And granted, you have to, I believe, reset that Zoom back to, Zoom, however you say it. You have to reset it back to factory defaults before you actually return it. So what's the point?
Duh, I don't know.
I mean, it's just one of those things where it seems like it will probably be a very good competitor to the iPad, but if you got to go through this rigmarole, how's it going to catch up?
Yeah.
But speaking of
the iPad.
The iPad 2 was renounced today.
Renounced?
Announced. What'd I say? Renounced?
Yes.
It was announced. Or re-announced?
Announced.
Yeah. It was announced today on March 2nd. And Steve Jobs was actually there on stage to present the presentation of the iPad 2, which was a big thing because
good for him.
There's reports of him possibly being near death in 6 to 8 weeks, you know? I mean,
oh, God, is it that soon?
Well, there's rumors. There's been a couple rumors passed around the last couple of weeks saying that he had to take his leave of absence because he only has 8 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks to live, which, I mean, from what everyone was saying today during the iPad 2 coverage, he looked pretty much like he did before. So
who knows?
Pure speculation, shouldn't be really a topic for discussion other than, somebody made a rumor and it's really stupid.
Yeah. Well, anyway, go on.
The iPad 2 was announced in California, and it is actually in a slight improvement over the iPad that came out last year around this time. It is 8.8 millimeters thick. It's still a 9.7 inch frame, and it weighs 1.3 pounds, which is about 0.2 pounds lighter than the original version.
And slightly thinner than the original, too.
Yes, it is. I believe the original is 9.7 millimeters thick, possibly. Can't remember exactly what the stats on that is. The resolution of the screen did not change. It is 1024 by 768 resolution. Give you 720p, I guess, sort of. Everybody was hoping that it would have a Retina display, but they still kept the price down to the prior price points. It is going to have a 1 gigahertz dual-core A5 processor with improved graphics. It does actually have the dual cameras that everybody's been anticipating, a 720p HD video recording capable back camera. There is no mention as to the statistics on the camera as of yet, so it's not clear as to whether it will be good for OCR applications or not for visually impaired folks to scan things. The keyword that everybody was hoping to see was that it was 720p native HD video. So it could be an upscaled HD video, which is not good. Or as good as what you get actually on the iPhone. It'll have a 5x zoom and 30 frames per second. The front camera will be good for FaceTime, but as with the iPhone, it'll be a lower quality than what's on the back. It will actually have a wonderful accessory that will actually allow for digital AV audio video out.
Yay.
Up to 1080p. So you'll actually be able to buy a cable and plug into your TV or computer or something else and actually stream video from the iPad. It is quite nice in that respect. They have come out with a new smart cover for the iPad 2, a wonderful $39 plastic cover that you put on your iPad that will actually roll over it, locks into place with magnets, and has a microfiber cloth underneath or such that will actually wipe off the screen as you close the iPad. The smart cover will also have the cool feature of when you pull it open from the iPad will actually come back on.
That's nice.
So it's kind of like a refrigerator thing. Does it close? Does it open? Does it close?
So I guess the magnets tell it.
Yeah, the magnets tell it that,
that is so cool.
It needs to wake up. So that's like kind of cool. It will also be a foldable case so that you can actually roll it up into a little triangle so that it will actually be an iPad stand.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's kind of nice. It is $39, and you can get the leather version for $69.
Just to clarify, this is the smart cover, not the iPad itself.
That is correct, Alex. Oh, and the digital audio video cable that you can get to stream video out from the iPad is $39 as well.
Yes.
That is evidently their typical price point, but everybody that saw the smart cover says that it is quite nice compared to the other version that they had last year that was basically a sleeve.
Piece of plastic.
Yeah. The iPad. Got to go back to Boston. The iPad is going to start at $499 for the Wi-Fi only version, and the price points will continue up all the way to $829 for the 3G version. There will be a version for Verizon and a version for AT&T. So you'll have to actually pick your carrier, mm-hmm. that is. This is going to be interesting because no one has released any information as far as what their 3G coverage is actually going to be and what the plans are for Verizon
for
or AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
For the iPad too. Now, iOS 4.3 was also debuted. It will apparently run JavaScript faster,
yay,
allow for wireless streaming to iOS devices, and apps can actually play audio and video to Apple TV and other devices. So you will actually, from what we are guesstimating, you'll be able to take something like Netflix or Hulu and actually stream it to your Apple TV and play it on your television. So that could be interesting. Interesting. Another note for iOS 4.3 is it will be released on the same day as the iPad 2, which is March 11th.
Madhouse.
Yes.
Madhouse.
And the interesting thing is that they are going to do an afternoon release. So the iPad 2 will be available at Apple stores at 5 p.m. on March 11th. They do not appear to be taking pre-orders, so you'll have to pre-order on March 11th as well. So that's kind of interesting.
What are they smoking?
I don't know. I guess they're wanting to, they must be wanting to create a big stir about it.
Maybe. Maybe they're doing an all-day hype thing.
Yeah, I don't get the gist on it. The iOS 4.3 will come out on that day. Curiously enough, iOS 4.3 will not come out for Verizon. They have not mentioned a release date for that.
Huh? What? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. The iOS 4.3 will only come out for GSM phones, which are your AT&T models, and devices. So if you have a Verizon iPad or iOS device, you will be without it, I guess.
So the Verizon iPad 2s are going to come out, but they're going to be running 4.2?
Yes.
Huh.
Because I guess the Verizon version of iOS right now is like 4.2.6, I believe it is. So there must not be much of a difference between the two. So maybe they're going to wait until the summer when iPhone 5 possibly will come out. Unknown. But, I mean, is the iPad 2 right for you? If you want a camera, possibly. We put out a Polowers, whatever you call it, Twitter poll the other day, and the one topic that came up on there was that everybody wanted more storage, which 128 gigs of storage or 80 gigs of storage would be great. That didn't happen because it's still your 16, 32, or 64 gigs of storage. There will actually be a black and a white one. Big whoop.
Yeah.
You know, but it's kind of questionable. I'm very tempted, though.
He says he wants a 5th anniversary wedding present.
In the 6th year.
Yeah, but I never got a 5th year present, and this would only be his present.
But it'd be a joint present.
Why? You'd be the only one who would use it.
No, you could use it when I'm not using it.
This is what I'm saying.
Okay, maybe that's not going to work.
I don't know.
It seems like it's really good. It's a good improvement with the dual core processor, 1 gigahertz processor that it has in it. One cool thing that will be is GarageBand will be coming out for the iPad, and you'll actually be able to record almost like a podcast studio.
That's really cool. Yeah, it did. That did look really cool.
Yeah, so that might be a thing because you could actually record 8 different channels.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. We'll see.
Well, let's move companies. Let's switch giants here a little bit. We were talking about the Apple iPad, you being able to stream things to your Apple TV and all this. Well,
possibly
Amazon,
Netflix.
Yeah, possibly Netflix. Amazon is coming up with its own streaming service.
Yeah, they're coming out with on-demand videos and movies so that you can watch them on your television using your basic devices like a Roku player and such. This is going to be offered for Prime members. So if you pay $80 a year for the
Prime subscription,
which gives you 2-day shipping, or I believe it's $3.95 for 1-day turnaround, which is kind of nice. I mean,
yeah.
I can kind of deal with the free 5 to 7 days, you know. That's
it just depends on how much you order from them, you know.
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing for this is the fact that only the primary account holder gets access to this.
Well,
so you can share.
Exactly.
You can share your account with up to 4 email accounts, but only the original person can actually use this service.
Huh.
So they're offering it for free. They're giving you shipping. It's going to be streaming. Right now, they do not have as many titles as Netflix. So could be a very big competitor, seeing as how Amazon actually has some different agreements with other studios.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the drawback, of course, is you have to subscribe to Prime in order to get it. But then once you subscribe to it and pay that subscription every year, it's free.
Yeah, and if you get three other friends to share with it, you get the benefits of the movies. But they only get the shipping.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Mm-mm. Something about the arrangement doesn't sit well with me.
Now, one drawback to it is that I do not believe the Amazon service actually allows for closed captioning.
That was my next question, because I didn't see it in the article. I wasn't sure.
I don't believe that is a feature as of yet.
Because some Netflix titles are closed captioned. And this is actually another story this week. They rolled out an announcement that more of their titles were going to be closed captioned. That ability was going to be available in thousands more of their titles. I don't remember the exact number. But somebody has indicated that this might not actually be true, that they may actually be closed captioning a lot less titles than they're claiming. And one blog speculated that the reason that it seems like they're doing more than they really are because Netflix, when it's counting its statistics, is counting each episode in a closed caption series as one separate title. And so when other people who are counting that series as just one title, of course, that cuts out a ton of numbers that way.
Well, and too, there's an argument that some of the series actually won't, only a few episodes will actually be
closed captioned. And not all of them.
Yeah, but apparently there's 3,500 movies and TV series that are closed captioned.
Yeah,
which
Netflix,
is like 30%.
Yeah, the Netflix number was higher, as I recall correctly.
Mm, no.
I don't remember. Anyway. So about 30% are closed captioned, and I think they are working on it to make that a greater, larger number.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a little bit of a discrepancy there.
Yeah.
It's always about the numbers. It's always about the numbers.
Yeah, it's always about the numbers, and they'll get it ironed out. And if people are smart, they won't take them to court over it and go into all the hullabaloo. We don't need that. Another interesting thing that is definitely in the research and development stage, some researchers at the University of Arizona State have come up with a way to make computer-generated photographs tactile, to print them out on paper so that blind people can feel the image with their fingertips. I'm not exactly sure what kind of lines, what texture they have, what if it's a braille printout, what it is. But apparently what they've done is they've taken photographs of people like from Facebook and other places, and they've been using some recognition software on it to plot the features of a face, starting with the main features like nose, eyes, and lips. And they're printing that out in sort of a tactile form so that blind participants in the study anyway can get feedback from it, like the shape of a person's face and the length of their nose or the form of their lips, et cetera.
Hmm.
And this obviously has a long way to go, but apparently the study has been very successful so far, and the results have been encouraging.
So it's kind of like the Braille printers that were mentioned back at the ATIA.
Yes, kind of like that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't know if it's a giant Braille printer that's printing it off, if the texture is a little bit different, like more like raised lines than dots. I don't know.
Yeah, what was the thing you used back in college, the little tape stuff?
That's something that Jim used. I never even heard of it until he showed it to me. It was called Flex Tape?
I believe that's what it was.
It wasn't like a blindness-related product. It was just something that was sort of out there, and the guy who ran the disability services department used it to make line drawings. He would take the tape and you could bend it into corners and different shapes. The main thing that used to be used was a sewing wheel. You have a rubber mat and you place it down, put a thick piece of paper on the mat and take a sewing wheel like you would buy to use for material and trace lines with that. And of course you'd also use a compass to draw curved lines with a geometry compass, not a directional compass, to draw curved lines and everything. And I have all those tools still with me, although I don't use them that often. But those are the things that are currently used. So I don't know if the texture is going to be like lines, like creases in a paper, like dots that a sewing wheel would make. So it'll be interesting to, if this ever takes off, be interesting to see what kind of specialized printing equipment you'd need.
I wonder if that would actually help with the validation or verification that Facebook wants to do as far as, you forgot your password, please pick one of your friends that you actually recognize. Oh,
wouldn't that be funny? Now, how could they get it to do that? It's not like you would reach over and touch a monitor or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Just something to think about, you know, because that is something that supposedly Facebook is rolling out.
Think away. What were you thinking? Some dude decided to burgle a house, take a bunch of money and some laptops, and a jacket, a coat, a nice, well-fitting coat, and then to take a picture of himself in the coat, holding a big wad of cash that he stole from that house, and post the picture on the Facebook page of one of the household occupants.
Did he do it on... I thought he did it as his profile picture. Maybe not.
No, he posted it on the guy's son's Facebook page.
Well, isn't that stupid?
He sent it to him. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I think he posted it.
Yeah, he did post it to the person that he actually robbed.
Yeah.
Showing it, which is kind of stupid because, well, you kind of going to get caught because you created a Facebook page and posted it.
Well, it's weird because he posted it not to the head of household, like the father, but to the son.
Yeah, I believe that was Rodney Knight in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., yes.
That did that wonderful brain thing
there. Big brain. Big brain. And he pled guilty to second degree burglary or
how are you gonna actually plead not guilty?
I know, this is what I'm saying, or even no contest. You could plead no contest, I suppose.
Insanity, because it's pretty insane to me.
Yeah, you could plead not guilty by reason of insanity. You could ask for a prayer for judgment, but that would be kind of stupid because it's right there in front of you that, oh, you've got this photo with you in a coat with a big money roll. I guess guilty is about the best you can do.
Yeah. Unless you cop the insanity. Pretty insane to me.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's insane. I think he's just stupid.
Yeah, that's probably more along the lines of that. But on this insanity note,
this
that you have been listening to.
This disastrous mess has been Tech Access Weekly episode
83.
To find out other stories and read more on the stories we did cover, go to delicious.com/techaccess/83. To send us tweets, commentary, other sorts of paraphernalia of that nature, you can tweet us or email us.
Or to complain.
Yeah, you can also complain. Or you can leave us a voice message.
Nobody ever does that.
I think we've had like 3.
I think so.
That's been about it. But call Uniondale, Indiana. They've got lots of snow up there.
Yeah, it's kind of chilly.
We're snowed in up here. We don't have anything else to do. Call us up.
Yeah. In the home office.
Yes, in Uniondale, which incidentally I have family members who are quite close to there. Creepy.
You know, maybe they could get us a picture of like this of the courthouse or something there so that we could actually put it on the website as our home office.
No.
Bummer.
Nah. Sorry. No go.
Maybe
all
there'd
right.
be like a Kenny Rogers roaster or something there.
Okay, focus on ending this thing. Okay. Focus.
So anyway, this is the disaster that you know as Tech Access Weekly. If you want to check out the Melting Pot on Mushroom FM, you can do that on Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m. It can be anything from craziness to non-craziness.
Yeah, well, last week the songs were chosen from even-numbered years, so songs that were popular in like 62, 74, 88, that kind of thing. And this week there is...
And it took place on an odd day.
Yes, it took place on an odd day. One person tweeted Melting Pot and said, why did this take place on an odd day? I'm just curious. And I had to think about that a second.
Because my show comes up on Sundays.
Yes. Well, no, but I think my response was, well, it took place on the 28th day of the month. No, the fourth Sunday in February. It took place on the fourth Sunday in February.
Oh, so you got away with it
exactly.
that way. Okay.
Exactly. It's okay. The fourth of a certain day.
That's stretching it.
Yeah, well.
Who cares, right?
Who cares? It's my show. I can do what I want.
Pretty much.
So usually the themes are sort of spontaneous, but what you can count on is that there's going to be a wide variety of music from all across the board. You may get classical, you may get heavy metal, or God forbid, rap, country, rock, anything you can think of. So, you know, I encourage you to tune in for The Melting Pot. Last week, and I do have some rotating features, book reviews, and words of the week, one hit wonders. I need to do one of those again.
Comedy corners.
Comedy corners. So, you know. It's a whole lot of fun.
And two, if you are a musician putting out your own music and things, you can submit your songs for play on The Melting Pot.
Yes.
We have actually had a few people inquire about that.
Yes. So, and I'm always interested to play new things. So send us a line. You can find out how to do that. You can email aaron@mushroomfm.com.
Yeah. Either way will work. And on that note, we will end this mess and simply say bye-bye.
Bye. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. You may follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TA_weekly. You may comment on our voice line at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. To find a list of the stories covered in each episode, please visit delicious.com/techaccess. Feel free to visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.